We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man Andreas Hale. It is good to be back midweek. Not too much on the boxing and MMA front, but there are a lot of fights announced that we will get to. Some inked, some in pencil, but a lot of good moving and shaking in the boxing realm. We also got to talk about the Charlo Castano undisputed fight that just happened last weekend, ending in a draw. We got to break that down, how Dre saw it, how I saw it, what is best for both of them moving forward. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the UFC. Miesha Tate returned last week, had a big performance. And then, of course, they have a card this week with TJ Dillashaw returning for completely different reasons than Miesha Tate returned. So we'll break all of that down in the final segment today. But it feels good, Dre. It's been a while. Let me stretch real quick. I don't know what hot takes are going to come out today. We get to talk hip hop, and it's been a hot second since we got to just chill, open the show with a straight hip hop first segment all the way through. Not just verses, not anything else. This is hip hop going on in the world this week. Tons of stuff coming out. And before we get to kind of the usual breaking down the XXL freshman cover, we have to start with something that happened today in the hip hop world. And that's Royce versus Lupe. They've been on this. They have a podcast together. They've been talking shit to each other on social media, friendly back and forth. And it led to today them both releasing diss tracks, because they've been talking about this on their podcast. Like, who's the better rapper? They've been going through their catalog. Like, yo, you're dope, but I'm better. And they've been breaking stuff down. And today we get diss tracks from both Lupe and Royce to each other. Man, this is fun. I like this. I like friendly beefs where they still try to roast each other. This is good. We need more of this.
Yeah. I mean, I was up in the, you know, looked in the morning. I don't listen to Royce and Lupe's podcast, which is weird because you think I would, because as much as I like Royce and Lupe as MCs, but I don't. And I happened to come across this and I saw Royce's diss. Then I went back and I was like, wait, what the hell's going on? I saw the whole thing with like Young Guru and a few other cats on IG Live. And then, you know, Royce telling Lupe to put his shirt on and Lupe said, it just... the shit just got weird. And then there's this track. And then when I woke up this morning, Lou had already responded. I will say this, though. It is teetering into personal territory, because once Lupe said, I wish they would have took you instead of Biz Markie, I was like, you kind of went a little too far right there. Everything else, you know, is fine. But Death, you know, because they're cool, but it's not like they're like best friends. And then you say, you know, I wish somebody took your ass instead. Oof, that's a big one. That being said, this was incredibly entertaining. These two are two of the best rappers on the planet, in my opinion. Technically speaking, there's a very short list on who's better than Lupe. I don't know who it is, to be honest with you, in terms of like technical skill, double, triple, quadruple entendres.
It's very, very short list, sir.
Maybe it's Royce. Was it just Royce?
Royce is close. I still put Lupe above Royce. I mean, you're getting into the Rakim stages of it. And Rakim just did it first. I still say Lupe does it better. You're getting into the Black Thought territory. You're getting into some rarefied air.
To be honest with you,
Kendrick when he's in his bag,
man. But I'm talking about not making great songs, right? Like Kendrick can make a great song,
yeah.
But when it comes to straight rapping, not even necessarily battle rapping, straight rapping, like rapping as poetry, there are few, if any, better than Lupe. Like, yeah, I love Rakim. Rakim laid the groundwork for this. Lupe just took all that and is improved upon all the building blocks of the MCs before him. I listening to that, his response, which was the same night, it's ridiculous.
Oh, it's easy for
him. There's like, so because of that, I went back and I hadn't listened to SLR, the original SLR in years. And I just, dude, I forgot how like ridiculous he got off on that joint. And it's like, and it makes me, I'm like, damn. And I love Royce, but damn, this is like, there are, again, few who could touch Lou. Royce is in the realm, but still, Lupe is absurd as a rapper. Like, he is the epitome of everything that the XXL freshman list enjoys. Like, he's the epitome against that. He's like the paradox. Like, I don't think anybody on that freshman list, like, if you listen to that freshman list and you listen to Lupe, like, I don't see how you can pull it off. I think your brain would malfunction. Like, that super Lupe backpack rap, super scientifical, like, the shit that the common man makes fun of super dope rappers, that's what Lupe is.
But he was on the cover. How mind-boggling is that? How exactly crazy is it that it's changed that much that you get one of the, I think you can't even argue, one of the top three most technical rappers of all time was on the cover. And now, I can't name one person on this cover. And the freestyles I watched, I don't feel bad about it.
Yeah, no, fuck all that.
It's ugly, but I love that. I love the friendly competition. I get the line you were talking about, but even then, I think they just entered it into it. It was like, yo, we're just going to rap. Like, we're not taking anything personal.
Be careful, Roy. Look,
we shall see you on the podcast. I mean, on the podcast, we shall see.
I'll say this. I've known Royce for years. He didn't respond to my text last night, right? Like, I texted him late last night. I was like, what's gotten into you? Like, because that shit was the, I mean, it's the Lambda, Lambda, Lambda shit. If you're a Revenge of the Nerds movie fan, you understand the reference because he's going at Lou's, you know, Revenge of the Nerds mixtape series. And I was like, what's gotten into you? This morning when I heard Lupe's response, I decided not to text him again. Maybe he was busy. I was like, I'm not going to text Royce right now because I know Royce. And although, like, Royce isn't a, he's not, I'm trying to figure out how to explain this. From the years that I've known him, he's not necessarily a very playful guy when it comes to threats. Like, he doesn't take that shit lightly. He's a Detroit dude at the end of the day. Yeah. So I, like, when I heard that bar, I was like, ooh, he ain't gonna like that one. So yeah, I mean, you know, possibly these two keep it, but it just feels like there's so much tension. Even on the podcast, I started listening to a few episodes. I was like, it's like they like each other, but they don't. It's like it's
two competitors all the time. Like, it's, they're together because they're contrarian.
Yeah, and it's like, who's, and this is gonna sound ridiculous and somebody's gonna say something, but between those two, who's Scotty? When I say who's Scotty, I mean Scottie Pippen, because I get that feeling in the room, like with those two, like the air is thick. And now that they're doing this, one of them has to be Scottie. You both can't be Jordan.
Yeah, it's tough.
And neither of them is going to take a step back. They are the only person that Royce puts above him is M.
It's M, which he's passed M a long time ago.
Yeah, but
you know, we're just keeping it a buck, but he'll never say that.
Yeah, of course he'll never say it. It's a man who put him on. It's a man who was there with him day one when fucking Royce had like locks. Like, they've been down like four flats for two decades, at least, minimum.
Yeah.
And Eminem at one time was the greatest rapper in the game at one time. The subject matter never changed. But when we talk about straight technical and lyrical ability, not necessarily content.
Yeah, M would be the Lupe level of that. But Lupe's never fallen off. Can't say the same about M.
So no, Lupe,
the longevity again, trumps it.
My only issue with Lou has always been the same issue that I've always had with Lou. Lou makes great songs. Like, he could say, oh, I'm going to rap about, like, the letter Q. Like, food just start with the letter Q, like White Man Can't Jump. And he can make it a dope concept. But is it a dope song? And that's always a challenge with Lupe. Because sometimes you don't want to think that hard. There are people that listen to Lupe songs like Mural, and Mural's incredible.
Oh, one of the best rap songs ever.
But the average Joe is too much. It's literally, it's like, get this weight off of my shoulder. I can't. This is too much. It's too much. Fair. And Lupe has a hard time in his career. Like, yes, he's had like Daydream. Yes, he's had Superstar. But then you get to like Lasers territory when he was doing an album that he pretty much didn't want to do. Yep. And when it came to him trying to make songs and the things that he passed up on, like, he's not like a
passed up on airplanes. That's tough. I mean, yeah, words I never said, but still tough.
No, he passed up on airplanes with Bruno Mars. Like, there's another song he passed up on that went to Bruno Mars. Oh, Nothing Without You. He passed up on that.
Yep.
And yeah. That's Lupe. He's so beholden to the art of rapping that he will never, like, if he sees something that sounds like, oh, this might be a little jiggy, it's like, ugh, yuck, and he'll like throw it away. And then do the next song he does is so complicated and complex, he has to rinse the idea of being mainstream off of him. It's really weird. But that's how Lou functions. That's his only fallback, because he's not accessible. He's not as accessible as Royce, and even Royce is not terribly accessible. But Lupe, man, Go on the
book. Guy's a Shaolin monk. Like, for real. Like, motherfucker uses swords and shit. Like, he's really there.
Go hit the block with some 21-year-olds right now that are listening to, like, Roddy Ricch and shit, and go play, like, Lupe's Mural and watch their face.
Yeah, just watch it. I tried to play it for my cousin who's, like, 21, mm-hmm. and he was playing all that shit in the car. I was like, nah, you gotta listen to this. And then at the end, he was like, yeah, but he's not... He's like, yeah, but what is he saying? I was like, are we starting? Is this where you want to start the argument? Like,
yes, exactly. Where,
like, but what is he saying? What are they saying? Like, uh-huh. It's, oh my God. It was frustrating. I couldn't say anything back because that was such a ridiculous statement. It was like, yeah, but what is he saying? I was like,
that's
yo,
I feel. It's too much.
Quadruple entendres and, oh my God, he's talking about a pain, like the one on top of a barn, but then he used pain here. Like, oh my God, you don't even know. You don't even
Here's the problem for starters. Ask what a double and triple entendre is.
That's tough.
Exactly.
He's college educated. He should know, but
it doesn't matter.
He doesn't want it in his music. Doesn't want it in his music. He likes these young whippersnappers who sing. That was his other gripe. He was like, oh, he just raps. I was like, excuse me. Like, excuse me. Well, no, everyone else, that, you know, there's harmonies, there's this, that, is more than just rapping words and rhyming words. I was like, they can't even sing for real.
They don't care.
It's frustrating. Now I'm frustrated. But it's a perfect transition into the most recent XXL cover, because with all that being said, the one person I do know on this cover and that I really like is Moray. And yo, that kid is dope. I like the single. He got big man swag. He got the sweat rag. We're just twirling it about. Yo, if you grew up in a hood, if you grew up anywhere, the hell with the hood. If you grew up anywhere with any type of humidity, you know there's always someone with the sweat rag. We just carry the washcloth outside of the crib and they gotta wipe themselves down constantly. My cousin Brandon was the king of this shit. He never left the crib without his washcloth to wipe his sweat. I don't know why he sweats so much, but constantly. I'm like, yo, that gotta be disgusting. Hollering at girls. I'm dating myself, but he had like the South Pole fit with the cartoon characters.
With the Tweety Birds and shit.
Yeah, with the Jabot jeans and shit. And we used to rock the headbands. Like the N1 headbands.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, that, when he got the stripes in the middle, the three stripe, I remember it to this day. It was all white, but it had the dark blue and then the sky blue in the middle. And he had that, and he'd be out, like, Boulevard Mall hollering at girls. and he's chilling and blah, blah, and got the sweat rag. I'm just like, yo, this can't be cool. But no one ever complained. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Everyone knows someone with the sweat rag. And to get fancy, like if he knew it was a super hot day, he used to put water on it, then throw it in the freezer, and it kind of freezes over. And then you, when you hit the streets, it's like an ice cold joint and it will melt throughout the day. There was levels to this shit. But again, that's one of the things I like. And the songs by Murray is dope. He was also just on J. Cole's album. He redid the Pharrell March part in that sample, in the song he sampled from Styles P. So that was dope. He crushed that. Over the freestyles, he saved that poor girl's freestyle, or he tried to. It was still horrible. But he had to start harmonizing and singing in the background, doing ad-libs, because she was so bad. And let me look up this woman's name. Her name is Coyle Ray.
It's Benzino's daughter.
Listen, not one of her fans know who Benzino is.
Yeah, they do. Somebody watches Love and Hip Hop or somebody. Yeah.
Maybe that's where they know him from. Like Stevie J. No one knows why Stevie J is on the show if you're under 25.
No.
You just know him from Love and Hip Hop.
Yes. We talk about this XXL freshman list every year. And this is the first year that I can legitimately say I looked at everybody on this list and I was like, I don't give a fuck about anybody on this list. Like, at all.
You're super old man now.
Yeah, like, this was the day where I was like, you sent this to me because I don't, first of all, who cares about XXL? Second of all, like, seriously, who cares about XXL? Like, XXL used to be the place where Elliot Wilson used to work. Rob Markman used to be there, B-Dot wrote for there, I've written for XXL, my man Aqua, like some true luminaries in this culture. Kathy Ann Doley, who's got a book on Aaliyah getting ready to come out and working on a book with Lil' Kim. Like, there were some incredible writers there. I'm not saying there are no dope writers at XXL. I'm just saying that the culture has changed. And when I looked at the cover of this and I was like, who the fuck are these people? And I was like, I've completely... Because this is what happens. Like, Coyle Ray, for instance, when I shit it all over a freestyle, and people were like, that's because you're old. No, it's not. It's the music that they chose all follows the same theme. And because of that, I can't fuck with it. But there are 20-year-olds, there's 24-year-olds, dope. Like just a few years ago, Chance the Rapper was 21.
Yeah.
And making dope music. Vic Mensa, I was just listening to Vic Mensa's in a tape today. And I was like, damn, what happened to that guy? Even though he still makes music, but I really like orange juice and orange soda and all that shit. But young rappers can still be dope.
Corday is super dope.
Yeah, Corday is incredible. I love Corday. It has nothing to do necessarily with age. Yes, I get it. It's a certain type of music that connects with a certain demographic. But it's not because that they're young, because I guarantee you some of the people on this list are over the age of 25 making this shit. But I looked at this list and I was like, woo, Pooh Shiesty? Nope. Flo Milli? Flo Milli's all right. But no, none of these people I'm going out of my way to check out.
I know the Toosie dude just because he walked out Shakur Stevenson at the last fight.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's true.
42 Doug. 42 Doug, is that his name? 42 Doug.
If you can't say his name, you don't know who he is. So yeah,
42 Doug. I know he got a song on the radio. I don't know exactly how it goes, but I know the young kids like it.
It's on the radio? Who listens to the radio?
I don't know, man. That's a good thing. I don't know. He got a song on TikTok. You want me to say that? That's where all the kids find music.
Yes.
Like, are you doing numbers? Like, do you got to dance on TikTok? Like, what's going on here?
That's the question. And I don't have a TikTok.
Ruby Rose? I've never heard of Ruby Rose before.
Doug, eventually, like I do every year, I'll listen to everybody's song on this cover. But looking at this right off the bat, I was like, oh, I don't care. And because I don't care, like, I'm not going to get caught up in it. Like,
please listen to the Coyle Ray single. I've listened to.
No. Oh, and the funny thing was, right, so I tweeted about Coyle Ray's freestyle, because then she wrote a freestyle and she announced, I'm writing a freestyle. And I said, there's rules to this shit. You don't write your freestyles. People hit me, it's like, everybody writes their freestyles. That's not my point. My point is, nobody goes and says, I'm writing a freestyle. Nobody says that. If you go on Hot 97, you go on with Funk Flex, you go to LA Leakers, and you kick one of them extraordinarily long 10-minute freestyles, I know you wrote a lot of that shit. Just don't tell me you did. All right? That's how I feel. There's not too many rappers that have been coming completely off the top of the dome. There are plenty of rappers who have written so many rhymes that when they hear a beat, they immediately go to something they wrote that people haven't heard before.
Yep.
And some people still consider that a freestyle. I'm okay with that. But the moment that you tell me I am writing a freestyle, you just broke all the rules of hip hop. You don't tell anybody that.
You broke kayfabe. These kids don't respect kayfabe.
No, man, don't tell me how the sausage is made. Just rap and then be like, oh, I'm free. Like, just say I'm freestyling. But this, when you say I wrote a freestyle, you don't write a freestyle. You don't tell people you do that. And she did that. But her dad's Benzino. Benzino's whack. Benzino gave fucking his group Made Men a 4.5 in The Source. I'll never forget having this shit. Benzino's a piece of shit, dog. Like, for real. I remember, this is my one Benzino story real quick. Julia Beverly, who used to run Ozone Magazine, who did the Ozone Awards. Me and Julia used to talk pretty often. And I was working at Hip Hop Site and Hip Hop DX at the time. I was in between places. And Julia was running Ozone Magazine, which was like the source for the South. Something happened and Benzino got really mad at her and got her number and called her all kinds of wild derogatory shit. You can find it somewhere on YouTube. I guarantee it's there. And I hit her on AIM. This is how long this shit ago was. I hit her on AIM. And I was like, hey, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. What happened? And she sends me the voicemail that Benzino left her. And the one word that I will never forget, and I think anybody who has even remotely heard the story knows the word that I'm talking about, he called her a slut monkey. It was incredible.
It's clever.
He was like, you slut monkey. Like, he was going off so much that, like, he was going in and out. But the one thing that was very clear was the word slut monkey. And I aimed Julia back. I was like, did he call you a slut monkey? She was like, yep. And then she, like, LOL'd. And I was like, yeah, because you can't really take that one personal, because, damn, he was really mad. Like, really mad. Called her a slut monkey. Benzino was a piece of shit, though. He ruined The Source. Absolute piece of shit.
No neck, having ass. Nah, anyway, this is, Coi Leray. Like, listen, I don't know. I guess she has a million plus followers on IG or something.
Yo, she's got like 3 million. That's another part where I was like, yo, I've completely aged out of this shit. Like, what did she do to get so many followers? Who did she pay?
No, she was light skin with like braids. Like, that's
where is that it?
Yeah, I mean, You have access, you're light skinned, you got braids. Like, it don't take much. Like, your daddy still knows some people.
I didn't know.
You got a quote unquote uncle or aunt somewhere that can help you, you know, push your shit. You're good. She got the look. I just Googled to look for her song. The number one, like, when you just type her name into Google, is Coi Leray braids. That's the first thing that pops up. Like, people just want to know how they get braids like her. They don't even care about her music off rip. It's Coi Leray braids, Coi Leray dad, Coi Leray mom, and then Coi Leray net worth and Coi Leray no more parties, which is the song I was looking for.
I've had enough. This is giving me a headache.
Please listen to that song. Please. Oh, God. You were going to be like, yo, watch the video. Don't just listen to the song. Watch the video. So as we do when all these lists come out, though, and I can't believe I started this without saying everyone on the list. So you have the Moray kid. You have Ian Dior. Lakia. What appears to be DDG. 42 Doug.
Yo, I'm sorry. I'm really entertained listening to you read this shit because you're reading it like an old man. Like Snoop Dogg. Snoop Doggy Dogg.
Yeah.
And the dog.
This is their names. We're just trying to give you the correct pronunciation of the
You
names.
Read it. You read it like this appears to be DDG. I was like, yo, he's out of touch.
Ruby Rose. Someone named Blast, but the A is an X. So I believe it's still Blast, BLXST, Pooh Shiesty, Tusi, double I's, double O's, in case you're wondering how to spell that, Coi Leray, and Flo Milli. So that is the entire cover. I cannot tell you who is who, but the cover art is dope. It's kind of like a planetary theme. It's one of the best looking covers in a long time.
Sure, whatever. I don't care. It's double XL.
The good part, though, is that means it's a 10-year anniversary for the 2011 freshman cover, which was their fourth at the time. Let's see where these people are now.
This is unfair.
Always the fun part. And mind you, this is one of my favorite freshman covers. I'll say that off rip. But first, we have Meek Mill.
Oh, he's doing all right. Right?
Doing great. Couple prison stints aside, he's doing great. Robert Kraft took a helicopter to bail him out of prison or to get him out of prison. Like, you can't beat that shit. So Meek Mill, plenty of hits. They keep fared fine. Next up, Big Crit.
I think he did all right, don't you?
Listen, shout out to Justin Ivey. He might be the only person I know who's a bigger Crit fan than me. Like, Crit, if you put the Mount Rushmore of the 2010s up there, Crit gets my final spot. So, yes, Crit on the cover doing the salute. Gotta love that. Next, Sci-Hi the Prince.
Incredibly talented MC. Probably has not reached his potential as an artist, but
didn't bomb out.
No, he didn't. He's very dope. The next person did, though.
The next person, Lil Twist.
Where the fuck is he?
You know what? I don't know which one is on the children's show. I watch it on like Wii TV. It's like Hip Hop Kids or something.
That's enough.
Oh, Growing Up Hip Hop.
Oh, my wife watches that show.
Yo, you know what? It could be worse.
All right. That's
but little one of them is on there. I don't know if it's Lil Twist or not.
Little one of them.
Well, you know, like Young Money had like three of them.
No, I'm sorry. You just called him Little One of Them. And I was like, that could be the next rapper's name. Little One of Them.
Yes, that is Lil Twist. Lil Twist is on his fifth season of Growing Up Hip Hop. Yeah, as a mainstay character.
Yo, it's always funny because you go on these reality shows and they get a new career. And you know what that career has nothing to do with anymore? Music. They do no music anymore, but they end up on these shows and people watch them. And it's like, dog, nobody cares about your talent because you have none. But
no, he looks just like Wayne now. The long, like, blonde dread. Like, he's always just tried to be a carbon copy. Maybe that's why it didn't work out.
Sure.
But Lil Twist on television. 5 seasons. So, can't even say he flamed out. Next, Yellow Wolf.
He did all right.
He did all right. Fuck Yellow Wolf, though.
Yeah, but he's had
like
right?
Some real wild shit lately. But yeah, cool. Yellow Wolf. And for the record, I always thought he was the wackest one in the Shady Crew. Was never for me. Were you a Yellow Wolf fan?
No, I wasn't. No. I understood why people like Yellow Wolf. I just wasn't a fan.
God, yeah. He just has some bad verses. He has like the worst verse on One Tray. And that's saying something. Because I still don't know what the fuck, what's his face was talking about at that before Crit. But it's, I forgot who had the verse. It was horrible. And then, but still, Yellow Wolf was the verse on that song. Then Fred the Godson.
Rest in peace, Fred.
R.I.P. Fred.
Damn, Corona, back yo. To back RIPs on this one. Good Lord.
Yeah, fuck coronavirus and all that stupid shit. Like, Fred passed away not too long ago. That hurts. Fred was also talented. Great freestyle rap. Talking about freestyle, like Fred can spit. Mixtape scene, Fred had joints. So Fred still talented, but okay, he didn't reach his potential, but RIP. Next, Mac Miller.
RIP.
RIP. Was Damn. Just hitting his stride, in my opinion. And his mixtape catalog was insane. But to me, he was just hitting his stride.
And it's, man, I have one Mac Miller story. Q, who is his manager and is like his best friend, we always text back in the day. And I did a Decoded with Mac Miller. I want to say it was 2012. So we hung out. We're backstage. And who shows up to the show? Another late person. Debo. Debo's backstage. It was me, Mac Miller. My wife is there. My videographer there, Tanel. And fucking Tiny Lister is there. And it's before Mac goes on stage. And Q's like, oh, just hang out backstage. And that's my thing. If you know me, I always say, yeah, man, I don't feel like going back in the crowd. Can I just stay in the back or just stand on the side of the stage? And I stay on the side of the stage. And there's Debo. and he's dancing. I can't remember what he's dancing to, like something off the kids' mixtape. And he's dancing, and it's the strangest sight. So Mac looks at me while he's performing, then he looks over and he like nods his head over to Devo, and he's like, he has this look like, yo, I can't believe this shit. Devo is over here dancing. But it was one of my good memories of Mac Miller. We hung out for a while that night. He was telling me how excited he was because he had been working. It never saw the light of day. Him and DJ Jazzy Jeff were working on a mixtape. And I can't remember the name of the damn thing. And we reported, I reported it at Hip Hop DX back in the day. And no, actually Two Dope Boys. I reported it because I text Mac and we stayed on top of it and never came out. But he always honored like the golden era of hip hop. Like there was a dude who truly respected his craft. And yes, he truly was coming into his own. Funny dude, finally seemed like he was, you know, tapering off the drugs. He did a lot of drugs. But unfortunately, he's no longer with us. But that's two people on this list in 10 years that are gone. Fred the Godson and Mac Miller. That's crazy to me. Absolutely crazy.
Wild. Next, YG.
Hey, fuck Donald Trump.
Listen, the man's done well for himself. Yes. Probably my favorite debut album out of this cover. Crit's tough, though. Crit's debut album was dope. But YG, I mean, there's just, come on, that shit. We talked about albums that aren't classic, but I would say they're classic in my book. That YG album is that for me. So YG done well for himself and put Mustard on. So yeah, YG is fine. Next, Lil B.
Yo, the Lil B era is one of the most fascinating eras in like social media.
Swag. Ooh, Bass God. Still, the Lil B curse was a thing. They were covering it on ESPN.
It was so weird because Lil B, you know, with the pack and, you know, Vans, got my Vans on, but they look like sneakers. And all of a sudden, he was a fucking weirdo too. Met him a few times. He's a weird dude. But all of a sudden, it was like, it became a phenomenon. Like, what did he do to get to this level? But yeah, he's done all right with himself. He had a song with Ninth Wonder, Bass in Your Face. Was really fucking dope. If you haven't heard it, go find it on YouTube. I was like, what is this? It's incredible. But yeah, Lil B's done all right. He still got white girls writing his name on their feet. Hands. Yeah. Very strange.
I don't get it. Okay. But you follow if you're not followed by Lil B, what are you doing in this world?
Yo, Lil B and John Cena are like Lil B, John Cena, and Tay Diggs follow everybody. And so it always makes me laugh when somebody's like, yo, Lil B or yo, Tay Diggs, or, yo, John Cena's following me. They follow everybody.
The ultimate cosign right there. But yeah, Lil B. And by the way, my favorite Lil B verse is still Grove Street Party. Okay. Lil Wayne mixtape. Absolutely murders that verse. Incredible. Nothing's on beat. Blueface owes an entire career to Lil B.
Pretty much.
And kids have no clue that like Lil B, come on. He was the official Tishal blew up. So Lil B, great. That's not a bust. Lil B is dope. Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, that's the one who has the best debut album out of everybody on here. But okay.
You said damn, that's true. Yeah.
But I think Kendrick's done all right by himself, right? He's done okay.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, people may know him.
Yeah.
I mean, he has like three or four classics.
Yeah, you know, he's got a Pulitzer.
Depending on who you talk to. He does have a Pulitzer. So Kendrick, amazing. This was Section 80's Kendrick, 2011.
Yep. Well, actually, yeah, right Section around 80, Section
80. Just dropped, yeah.
Yeah, I think they shot this cover, if I remember, I talked to Tom. I think they shot this cover after Overly Dedicated, actually.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I don't think Section 80 was out yet. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. If Shake was here, he'd tell me. But I'm pretty sure this was off the strength of Overly Dedicated.
Wouldn't he have still been K-Dot on the cover then?
No, he would have been Kendrick. He was only K-Dot when he was Youngest in Charge. And people close to him called him K-Dot. But Overly Dedicated mixtape was, he was Kendrick Lamar. I met him as K-Dot in 2008. But he was Kendrick Lamar right around 2000. Like he started going by his full name in like 2009, 2010.
Interesting. Well, yeah, Kendrick Lamar, chill on a cover. And then Diggy Simmons.
And Diggy can rap.
Diggy can spit. And I just saw that he's on Grown-ish.
Yes, he is. I watch Grown-ish. I love Grown-ish. Very good show.
So Diggy Simmons doing his acting thing. I'm not even mad at that. That's like legit acting chops type shit. he's better than the brother who's on Growing Up Hip Hop.
JoJo.
Yeah. The whole family is on Growing Up Hip Hop except Diggy. So that tells you something. So he's doing well for himself. You know, as a matter of fact, the whole family is on there. And I watched an episode last week, and Angela was dating the boxer dude.
She was. Not anymore.
Oh, no? Mm-mm. Well, ain't that something? Well,
for those who don't know, it's Daniel Jacobs.
Daniel Jacobs. Yes. Yeah, that's what she was dating. Daniel Jacobs. He won that fight, too, questionably, against Gabe Rosado.
Yes.
But they're showing the lead up to that fight. And I was like, oh, look at this shit. But yeah, no, Diggy is not on that show. He has a real career. Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, so Diggy's doing well. I mean, you look at the entire cover. Twist. I mean, you say whatever you want about Fred the Godson. I thought he was dope. And that's about it. Out of 10 people, one person bricked.
Yeah. Everybody's had some sort of career. Now, there, people will say that, well, these guys on this cover prove it. There's a big difference between what some of these guys are doing and what you think they're doing. They might have a song. Holler at me in 10 years and let's see who's on this cover that we are talking about 10 years from now.
9 out of 10 ain't bad. Like 9 out of 10. Like you hit on 9 out of 10 when you say these guys are next. You're doing pretty well for yourself. But again, stuff was different. Writing was different. Sitting down with music was different. So how this was selected, I'm sure, is a lot different 10 years ago than how it is selected now.
Absolutely.
Because it's just followers and who has this TikTok dance out? So we'll see. We'll see where these people are in 10 years. It's always fun to look back. I will go out on a limb and say all of them except one will still be around. Or excuse me, will not be around. Only one will make it a decade.
Who?
I can't even call. I'm telling you, there's not going to be two. If I had to, I would probably say the Flo Milli. But only because I hear the name a lot.
The Flo Milli person.
Don't ask me about any of the content. I just hear the name. Maybe you can stay. Whoever is signed to, I don't know, whoever is like friends with Drake and has a song with Drake, that shit will keep you around like 5 years. It'll give you a boost. Like the Migos never tapered off after that. Or you could be these other people who have a Drake single and that shit's hot as day and we don't hear from you a year from now. So it'll be interesting to see where everyone is in 10 years. And I can't wait to hear what you say when you actually listen to these people's music. Sure. This week, just take some time out. Throw it on. Just a single from each. And let me know what you think about it, because it's going to be a doozy. But we want to hear from you guys, because, you know, I am old and washed in this subject, and he is old and washed all the time. Let us know who is dope from the cover, because you guys are often more in touch than we are with these young rappers. I will venture out into my living room and ask my children sooner or later, and they'll be like, "Ooh, you don't know this person." I'm like, "Of course I don't know that person." And then I'll torture the old man by dragging him with me to Day in Vegas Festival in November, and we'll show up there super early so we can watch them perform.
That'll never happen.
You can't even show up at like 3 p.m. Catch the 42 Doug set on stage.
I have to lose a bet for that to happen. Find a bet, because there's no way in hell I'm showing up to listen to those guys that early. It's never gonna happen.
He's so spoiled. Just a spoiled festival goer. Let's hit the break. After the break, we're gonna come back. We got boxing and MMA to talk about. Don't go anywhere. By the way, spoiler alert, I'm gonna play him one of the songs on the break. So if he comes back and he's extra ornery, you know why. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, it's Lindsay Rhodes, and I've got a new podcast, The NFL Roadshow. Fun and kind of nerdy conversation about the NFL every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I've got some amazing guests that are joining me. I'll be breaking the huddle with the top stories, previewing games. We'll get you set for the weekend fantasy with our Fantasy Friday episodes, and we'll answer some of your questions as well. So subscribe to The NFL Roadshow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever. wherever you get your podcasts.
But if you don't turn this shit off.
What? Yo, welcome back, everybody. We were jamming. What do you mean?
Turn that shit off.
No more parties, Dre. She don't want no more parties. Come on. So her daddy let her down. It's damn near Benzino diss track.
God, that's awful.
Yo, when the chorus hit, I was like, oh, that's what we're doing here. That made the double XL freshman cover. So interesting. Oh, I'm glad to see where you stand on Coi Leray's actual music. I feel like it's very similar to your response to her freestyle. So now our job, though, is to get back and get into talking about boxing. And there wasn't much boxing over the past weekend, but there was a big fight. We had Jermell Charlo, three belts at 154 pounds. Brian Castaño, one belt at 154 pounds. Going at it, one of what appears to be, hopefully, many undisputed fights in our future. And we've seen several already over the past calendar year. So boxing, for whatever people say, is trending in a good direction. It's not just all fucking old MMA fighters, Floyd Mayweather, and YouTubers. Like, actual boxing, fights are getting made for the first time in a long time. So with that being said, Charlo, Castaño go in there. Castaño's walking him down early a lot. And Charlo's fighting off his back foot. Don't really understand it. He wins a round. I'd probably give him like the fourth, maybe the sixth. So that's maybe two rounds in the first six. But Castaño's really, really walking him down. And then next two rounds, Charlo's kind of figuring it out. It's even rounds. They go either way. And then he hurts Castaño. And then it's just kind of like survival mode for a couple of rounds. But then Brian bounces back in like the 12th, and that's a round that can go either way. So seeing that performance from Charlo, seeing what we thought he was, or what people thought he was, not even we, what people thought he was, he wanted to be on the pound for pound list. Two rankings ago, I had him up that high. He has since slipped off of it, and now he's continuing to slip back. This is why I was hesitant to put him on there, just because his accolades anyway. Because I saw the Harrison fight. I saw him being outclassed, and then I saw him being outclassed again until he landed the knockout. And this is a troubling pattern that I'm seeing, is that I'm not sure if he has enough tools in his shed to really decisively beat top-level talent by decision. It's knockout or bust.
All right, so first and foremost, I didn't score the fight as it was happening. After Charlo buzzed Castaño in the second round, I tweeted it. I was like, oh, this is going to be over soon. He's figured him out. Then for whatever reason, Charlo decided, hey, you know what a good game plan is? Backing myself into the ropes and allowing somebody who's a pressure fighter by nature to do what he wants to do. Now, I'm not going to say that Charlo just completely let Castaño do what he wanted to do. There was a lot that Castaño had to do in terms of finding his way inside with foot feints and things of that nature. And that all worked. Much credit to him. But I stopped scoring the fight. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking up and I was like, yo, I think he's lost like four rounds in a row. Eventually, this fight is called split draw. We'll talk about that 117-111 scorecard, which looked like it was somebody who was watching the Suns-Bucks game that night and was like, that's the score of the game, so that's the score of my scorecard. I guess that's what happened. But Jermell Charlo, I have always said he's not the better Charlo. Jermall's the better Charlo, brother. Jermell looked good against Jason Rosario. The 154-pound division isn't really that great. So when he goes into this thing like, why am I not on pound-for-pound list? And then he takes a shot at Terrence Crawford. And I'm like, all right, dude, there's a reason why. Because we look at your resume. And with Bud, you're right. Bud doesn't have the best list of names on his resume. But you know what Bud does? Handle his business every time. Goes out there and beats the dog shit out of these guys. That's what Bud does. Charlo's not doing that. Charlo's not getting rid of guys he's supposed to get rid of. Castaño's undefeated, yes. But there was nothing about Castaño's style to suggest that he should be a 50-50 fight, right? I think Charlo was a minus 220 favorite.
Yep.
He should have won the fight. That's what should have happened. He fought a poor fight. And it's not knockout or bust. To me, I think Charlo can outbox a lot of his opponents. It's knockout or bust to Charlo. He fights like he has dynamite in his right hand. He was fighting that fight very similar to how Deontay Wilder fought Luis Ortiz, just waiting for the perfect shot. Well, guess what? You're not Deontay Wilder. You don't have the perfect shot. You need to fight 3 minutes every round to win your fights. You should never take your foot off the gas. You should never look for the perfect shot. You should never look for the highlight reel. You're a really good fighter, but you're not a knockout artist. And that's, I never had him close to my pound for pound list. And when I say close, it's like 15 to 20, maybe.
I mean, people were really like, yo, you don't have him up there? What do you mean? Like, belts don't mean everything. Like, my eyes tell me he's not one of the 10 best fighters in the world.
Dude, there are guys that are not on the pound for pound list, like Sean Porter. I put Sean Porter above Jermell Charlo.
Porter beats him, by the way, if they fight.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, in terms of what Sean Porter has done, I'm going to be honest. I think if Danny Garcia goes with the 54 and fights Charlo, that's a very intriguing fight because they're both very similar in like waiting for the perfect shot. It could be boring as fuck. I don't know. But I think those are two guys who are really good, but they're not pound for pound guys. You have Tank Davis, who's not on a lot of people's pound for pound list. Anthony Joshua's not on people's pound for pound list. You mean to tell me Jermell Charlo gets over Anthony Joshua?
Yeah, you're bugging.
No, man. Like that's not happening. There's Dimitri Bivol. There's Caleb Plant's not a lot of people's pound for pound list. I think Caleb Plant is better than Jermell Charlo. I think David Benavidez is better than Jermell Charlo.
Is Caleb Plant better than Jermall?
I don't know. The problem with Caleb Plant is that he also falls victim to the fact that he hasn't really fought anybody. Like, when he fights Canelo, I think we'll all get a really good idea of how good Caleb Plant is. But Caleb Plant, to me, passes the eye test better than Jermell. I don't know about Jermall. But that being Mall's said,
best win is J-Rock.
Yeah, and he fucking obliterated him. But he's looked good in fights. Like, he fights every minute of every round, for the most part.
Yeah.
Caleb Plant's not a big puncher. But boy, he's a hell of a boxer. Watching Caleb Plant fight, I'm like, yo, he fights. He doesn't take rounds off. He's really good. I can never put Jermell over these guys. I can't. I just can't. I don't know how people think he belongs in a top 10. Nah, man.
Yeah.
No, never.
And then now it appears they can't run it back because now he has a mandatory that he has to fight.
They got to fix that. They know that they need to let him run it back.
Yeah, they said it mandatory has been waiting, would have been waiting over a year at that point.
Who cares?
They run it back.
You know, look, this is the problem with sanctioning bodies because there is a mandatory. Do you know how many people know the name of this mandatory?
I can't pronounce the name of this mandatory, so no.
I'm just saying, like, nobody cares, man. Like, let these two run it back because that mandatory would now be in line for an undisputed title fight.
Yeah. The mandatory should wait.
Yes, he should chill. Like, the sanctioning body should say, okay, look, pay him, because I'm sure he doesn't make a ton of money anyway, so pay him like $100,000 to step aside. He'll get his turn. Go take another fight. If it's too dangerous, oh, well, then just wait. But the Castaño and Charlo have to run this back. They have to. I think Charlo wins the rematch because I think he fights a better fight and Derek James gets in his head early. Derek James, I had a problem with how Derek James was cornering him. I had a problem with Derek James waiting until the ninth round to say, you need a knockout.
Yeah.
In round six, he should have been on. He would have been like, Jermell, what the fuck are you doing?
In round six, he's still trying to like tell him, like, yo, just try this. He was being nice about it. Yo, just do this. Try this. Don't let him back you into the ropes. Like, giving him just little tips. I understand, like, it's hard to be like, yo, we need a knockout. It's the sixth round. The fighter would be like, what the fuck do you mean? Like, I have to fight left.
You don't even have to tell him you need a knockout. You have to tell him stop waiting. What are you waiting for? What you're doing is literally
when you
giving,
let your hands go, you're fine.
Yeah, like what are you waiting for? Get your back off the goddamn ropes. Use your jab. Derek James, he's a great trainer, but I think he should have gave Jermell a sense of urgency, like in the sixth round, and be like, yo, I think you're losing 5-1. At this point, you're going to need a knockout. If you don't get a knockdown, get to work.
That's interesting. Before we go on talking about some of the fights that are either confirmed or in the works, you bring up an interesting point. Can a trainer be too much of a friend and not enough of a coach?
It happens. It's not like surprising. It happens. But I don't think it happens for somebody like Derek James. I think it depends on what the trainer is looking at, because sometimes trainers look at what their fighter is doing, and sometimes trainers look at what the opponent is doing. And I think Derek James was looking at Jermell Charlo and going, okay, do this. But instead, he probably should be looking at Castaño and was like, hey, man, he just won like 4 rounds in a row after getting buzzed in the second. He got hurt bad in the second round.
Yeah.
Now he's come back and won three of the next 4 rounds. That's when you got to be like, all right, I need to watch what Castaño's doing, because Jermell's not doing something and it's him putting his back on the ropes. So, but it happens. I've seen trainers just not being good trainers, man. They just.
That wasn't a 10-8 round, by the way. One judge gave that a 10-8. Guy doesn't touch the ground, it's not a 10-8 to me in boxing.
Well, I don't know. I could see 10-8 rounds when guys are still on their feet and just getting completely owned. And Castaño was getting owned that round. I'm not mad at the 10-8. I'm not mad at it.
That made I guess it didn't make a difference because it would have just been another draw.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 117-111 scorecard.
Yeah.
How the fuck did Jermell Charlo win 9 rounds? That guy, man, look,
got a promotion.
Hey, here's what needs to happen. And every athletic commission in every state should do this. When there is a shitty scorecard, they should require the judges to go to the post-fight press conference and answer for that shit.
That's tough. I don't know if they get paid enough for that.
Hey, but if you are taking, because it's a job. You take a job, you are scoring fights. If you turn in a completely ridiculous scorecard, it shouldn't happen all the time. The judges should not always be there. But if there is a scorecard that is literally turn completely upside down. Now, 115, 113, we're talking about 117, 111. That judge needs to go in front of the press and explain his goddamn self. I bet you be careful next time. I bet you be careful next time. You got to hold these judges accountable. And especially in Texas, because they always fuck up bigger in Texas.
Oh, always. Constantly. So you mentioned that fight. Now we talked about a couple of the other people, but we will, you know, jump back around. Canelo versus Caleb Plant looks like it's in the home stretch for September 18th here in Vegas, which will probably be at the MGM. I love fights at the MGM. They put in for T-Mobile, but as my daughter has let me know, Billie Eilish will be at T-Mobile.
Yes, iHeartRadio Festival. You ain't beating that shit.
No, they are not moving for Canelo. And oddly enough, UNLV football has a home game at Allegiant Stadium that day. So they cannot do it at Allegiant.
Well, UNLV football, they could play that game in Aviator Stadium in the minor league ballpark. Nobody gives a shit.
I mean, Sam Boyd is still there. Like, technically, you could play one game at Sam Boyd.
Just get him out of here.
You just send him back to their old shitty home. Sorry. I know we said y'all could play in here, but it's Canelo. Like, y'all are going to sell 2,000 tickets, 3,000 tickets in the stadium. Canelo is going to sell 70. So, yeah, UNLV might have to bounce. But that's not an option. Looks like it'll be at the MGM, which means the price of the tickets will be a lot higher. But the atmosphere is incredible. Nothing beats just being able to walk downstairs and just be caught in the madness. And you know what this means, Dre? Mexican Independence Day weekend.
Yes.
If it's at the MGM, we have the true return of urban loitering.
Oh, yeah. The Latino edition.
Yes, yes, we do. I love it. You'll catch us at the whiskey bar post-fight, chilling, real grown man-like, staring there, watching all the shenanigans.
Look, man, I keep telling people, with people like T-Mobile, I hate it, because after the fight, you just leave. At MGM, you just fall into the casino. And when you're in the casino, you know, you go to the bar, you go anywhere. You just kind of people watch because that's where the hookers are hooking and that's where the players are playing. And that's where the urban loitering is in full effect. In the Mexican Independence Day edition, yo, drunk Mexicans are a fantastic group to be around.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. And this is one where they probably leave happy. A group of angry Mexican fans is a whole different atmosphere.
That's scary. Right? So
that's, they ride or die for their people, right? Yeah. Now Canelo is their guy now, which is odd because we were both at the Chavez Jr. fight and the crowd was split. Maybe more Chavez Jr. fans.
Well, there's a bunch of casuals who were like, well, I love his daddy, so I'm going to go with his daddy. Yeah, and so then he watched him fight and he was like, this kid's a piece of shit.
His dad just shaking his head, his head in his hand. But yeah, no, like this time it's going to be all Canelo. It's going to be crazy. So that's going to be a great atmosphere. Hope it is at the MGM. We also have Anthony Joshua versus Alexander Usyk. It is finalized. We talked about it several times on the show. Dre, the passport ready? Bags packed?
My passport's been ready. As long as COVID doesn't go too much crazier, because like Delta variant is like really kicking it in 2021. Yeah, it's more than likely I'm going to be in London, Hotspur Stadium. I'll be there. Here's my question to you. What is the – who's got a better chance to win? Usyk over Joshua or Wilder over Fury?
Usyk over Joshua.
Really?
There's more ways for him to win. Yep. He is a top pound for pound guy. He is an undisputed champion at a lighter weight. The thing that he has to overcome is size. That's it.
Yeah.
I can't say Anthony Joshua is a more technical fighter than him. No, can't say Anthony Joshua is the better fighter. I damn sure can't say Anthony Joshua has the better chin because he's been chinned several times. So does Usyk have the power at this weight? I don't know. But I mean, I seen Andy Ruiz land clean, just a flurry, and Joshua couldn't, you know, absorb that. Old man Klitschko dropped him. Like, so I don't know how much power it takes to even put him in trouble. Joshua has, like, let's be honest, some gas tank problems sometimes. it's weird. He punches himself out. Not that he just gets naturally tired. He swings for the fences sometimes, and then it takes two or three rounds to recover. And then he's back in there, and usually he knocks a person out after that when he catches his second win. But you can't do that against Usyk. The guy's a machine. One thing he doesn't do is get tired. Like, it's a whole different world. So, yeah, he has the tools outside of size to beat Anthony Joshua. Deontay Wilder has one tool to beat Tyson Fury. It's one hell of a tool. Like, it's not a Phillips screwdriver, right? The shit's a jackhammer. Like, it's a very good tool. But there's only one way he's going to beat Tyson Fury, and that's by knocking him out. He dropped him twice in the fight and only earned a draw. So you got to knock him starch out. And Wilder has the ability to do so, but I don't know. I don't like the idea of trying to teach an old dog new tricks. So he's getting bombarded with all this new information by a new trainer, and he's going to try to go to the body and use the jab more. I don't think any of that shit's going to work. He's not good at that. He's going to sit back and have to rely on sitting back and trying to land one big bomb of a right hand. And I think Fury can survive that more than Joshua can. A technical masterpiece by Usyk.
I'm going to disagree with you. And this is not like crazy. I'm not like debating you because I could see this either way.
Yeah.
But my problem with Usyk is his two fights that he's had at heavyweight. He didn't look that great.
True.
He didn't look great against Derek Chisora and Chaz Witherspoon. Like, who the fuck is that, right? So it's your third fight, and you're fighting Anthony Joshua, who's looks like fucking a pro wrestler, right? He's huge.
Yeah.
Not to mention, he's also one of the best finishers in boxing. And Usyk, yes, you're absolutely right. He is a pound-for-pound guy at cruiserweight. I don't know if there are many paths to victory for him over Joshua, because Joshua's lost one fight. That was by knockout to Ruiz. Usyk doesn't have remotely close to Andy Ruiz power. Remotely close. Hmm. So can he? And AJ's a really good boxer. Look, you say he gassed out, but I was looking at something the other day. Anthony Joshua is, like, outside of like Canelo, AJ has one of the best resumes in boxing, period.
Definitely. I did a post the other day. This is his third Olympic gold medalist that he would have fought.
He's fought Olympic gold medalists. He's fought former heavyweight. Like, he's fought everybody in such a short amount of time as a heavyweight. So I look at Usyk and I was like, man, skills. Yes, Usyk is absolutely has the skills. I think that size is too much to overcome. I think Wilder has a better chance of beating Fury. Really? Because of that one weapon, because of the one weapon you talked about, because it's a home run swing. Like, if it's the bottom of the ninth, nobody on, two outs, Wilder can still hit a home run and tie the game up. Usyk, he can't do that.
When he's down, he's down.
When he's down, he's down. Now, again, I'm not necessarily making a huge debate with you, because I could see exactly what you're saying in terms of the only thing Usyk has to overcome is size. He could shock the world because he's that good. He is a pound-for-pound fighter. He is an undisputed cruiserweight champion. Like, he has all those tools. But I just think if in the 11th round, let's just say that Wilder's still in the fight, like Fury's up, let's say he's up like four rounds or something, right? Yeah. I think we're still gritting our teeth. Like, man, if he hits that bomb, it could change everything.
We saw that in the first fight. He caught him in the 12th and it was over, except when it wasn't.
Like, right, right. So that's the only reason why I say I think, even though I think Wilder's going to lose, I think Wilder has a better chance because of that damn nuclear weapon that he has in his hands.
That's fair. Like, that's honestly, this is a true, and the heavyweight division is a lot deeper than it's been. Joe Joyce fights this weekend.
Yes.
I like Joe Joyce. He becomes a mandatory for Joshua. He's going to have to step his ass aside.
Yeah, definitely.
But I like Joe Joyce. Cool. Another Olympian. Good boxer. We have, the whole card, Ajagba's on the card for Fury Wilder. Like, there's dangerous heavyweights. There's good heavyweights out there right now. The depth is as good as I've seen it since the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Maybe before. Like, the depth of young heavyweights is really good. Jared Anderson's coming up through the top rank cycle. Like, there's so many good heavyweights. But when I look at this, this is a true semifinals matchup. To me, this is 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
And I mean, personally, I put Fury number one, but if you want to count the person with all the belts, it's hard to say Joshua doesn't get a one seed in the tournament.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, Joshua gets the one seed, Usyk would be the four seed. If this was NCAA, you know, football playoffs, and then you have Fury versus Wilder, and you're working your way into the ultimate match. So, yeah, I like this. Heavyweight boxing needs this.
Oh, yeah.
This is something 3 years ago we talked about. I'd be like, yeah, that shit never happened.
Yeah, man.
But it's here now, and it looks like it's going to happen. So I really like this. Can't wait to see how that turns out. And then the other thing to touch on is the WBO has mandated that Sean Porter is the number one contender for Terrence Crawford's belt and has given both PBC and Top Rank 30 days to negotiate the fight, or he'll go to purse bid. Hi, Triller. And I don't want to see that shit again. So it looks like they got to get the deal done. Bud was on the way, and reports by Coppinger and everyone else in the boxing space to just fighting anybody. They were just going to give him anyone. It's his last fight on his deal. They were going to pay him and then figure it out. If you walk, you walk. If you don't, you don't. Like, I don't have any knowledge of the inner workings, but it was like, yeah, let's just get through this last fight. Because you don't want to sit on a shelf. We owe you a couple of dollars. Let's just get this shit out of here. So, yep. This fight is a lot more intriguing.
It is. And, I mean, years ago we said this. Like, hey, Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter should fight. Yep. And you know, if they it goes to the purse bid, yo, Triller, they might as well just throw the farm at this one. Because seriously, 10 just here, everybody get what you like, just get it all. But obviously, Al Haymon ain't going for none of that shit. I think he'll try to out purse bid Triller before he lets Sean Porter fight on another fucking platform. I don't think Bob would. I think Bob would just let that one go. But I think Haymon would not. Either way,
and this is a fight to make. It has to be a pay-per-view.
Yeah, this is the fight to make. This by far, because let's find out how good Terrence Crawford is. We know how good Sean Porter is. He gives everybody hell. So if Terrence Crawford knocks him out or were to dominate the fight, then we go, oh, he deserves to be where he's at on the pound for pound list.
Yep.
He can fuck around and lose this fight. Shit or get off the pot. This is what's happening. So hopefully they make a deal and this fight is scheduled to happen for later this fall, end of the year, because I know Sean's ready to fight. I know Terrence, he needs the fight. So let's do it. But this is the best, one of the best fights. Well, this is the best fight outside of Errol Spence for Bud Crawford right now.
Who the hell is this Ugas fight then?
Who cares?
I mean, I care. Guy got a belt.
Look. Virgil Ortiz is fighting Mean Machine. Virgil Ortiz beats Mean Machine. Look, find a way. Find a way to get him over there to fight Ugas.
Oh, no. I mean, at that point, then...
You might kill him, but, you know.
Yeah, no. That's all bad. Because then who's getting that belt off? No. Spence would bounce.
Yeah, that's probably happening anyway. But I think Virgil Ortiz is the guy in position now that's like, all right, while you guys are doing this, let me slowly move around this division and get my hands on a belt. And Ugas needs to fight. I don't think they'll do it because of politics. But that's the fight to make. Virgil Ortiz beats Mean Machine? Yes. Put him in there with Ugas. And because Ugas is a completely different fighter than anybody that Virgil Ortiz has fought.
Ortiz is the gold champion, WBA gold champion.
I don't know what the hell that means. At the moment,
I don't know what that is either. Manny is the champion in recess. The WBA world champion is Jamal James. And then Ugas is the super champion.
I don't care about any of this. There's only a few titles that matter. WBC, IBF, WBO, WBA super. I don't care about the regular title. It's stupid.
WBA just be making shit up. Like, I'm looking at their rankings right now. Mario Barrios is at 6.
Dude, they don't
fights at 140.
They don't care.
Like, how are you 6 at welterweight?
They don't care. That's what I'm saying. The only belts that matter are those. I don't care about WBC. Like, they had a fucking Juneteenth belt. Come on, man. I don't care about any of this stuff. There's 4 belts that matter. All that other shit, I don't care.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because I'm still shocked they didn't overturn it for Pacquiao to get the belt.
Me too, but, you know.
You're fucking up sanctioning fee money. I thought it was all about the money.
You would think?
Yeah, I guess not. So, big slate coming up in the fall. It's going to be fun. Let's hit our last break. When we come back, we got to talk UFC. We had a fight last weekend. Misha Tate is back. Looked great in that one. Got to see what's next for her. And we got to break down this weekend's card. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back to wrap this up talking MMA.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
All right, as promised, we're going to talk MMA before getting out of here. Before we talk about UFC's card from last weekend, Drake, Paige VanZant is fighting, bare knuckle fighting again this weekend. It must be appointment viewing, isn't it? She has the whole weekend to herself.
I mean, I'm going to watch it. Paige VanZant and Rachel Ostovich in a bare knuckle fight? Why not?
That was the first ESPN, UFC ESPN fight.
You know, yeah, that's funny. And the thing about this fight, it's weird. It's going to sound very strange. But it feels like a fight that's happening that I would have... It's going to sound really bad. It feels like something I would have came across as like a 13-year-old in my dad's closet. And I was like, what's on this VHS tape? And it's like these two girls are fighting. And it's like, all right, so when are they going to, you know, this is porn, right? Like, this is, why are they doing this? As a kid, that's what I would have thought if I would have saw this fight. Because they're bare knuckle fighting.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like the strip club fights down in Miami type thing. Like, you'd be like, yo, are they really fighting? No, right. They're really fighting.
And it's like, and I'm not trying to disrespect Rachel or Paige, but it's just the optics of it all feel very like Paige VanZant, who was a contender in the UFC. Rachel Ostovich has never really been a contender in the UFC, right? She's always been on like the outliers.
Competitive fights, though. She always had competitive fights.
Right. But years ago, you know, Paige VanZant had always had a lot of dog in her, but she was never good enough to be like the best in the division. Rose Namajunas kicked her head off, so on and so forth. Rachel Ostovich, never was really there. But they have great Instagram numbers. You know what I'm saying? The dudes come and check them out. But you couldn't have told me that these two women will be fighting in bare knuckle boxing in a main event. You couldn't have told me this years ago. And that's why I look at it and it's just like, ah, this feels dirty. Like, I'm going to watch it because it might be a fun fight, but it just feels like, what are they doing this for?
Friendly for me.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than Paige's first fight where you knew her opponent came in to make a statement because they gave Paige VanZant the bag. You know, like, she was like, nah, like, this ain't like some pretty type shit. It's not that type of game. Like, you're going to come here, you're going to earn this money. It's really bare knuckle boxing. And Paige is like caught up and the other chick's caught up. This one seems like, and I hope I'm wrong, like they seem too nice about it. They're too buddy-buddy. Like, I don't know if they're going to swing all out. I don't know what it feels like to go 15 minutes and punch someone with your bare hands. It's a whole different game. So it doesn't seem like one of those, like, back to the wall, this is going to get bloody, dragged out, crazy. No.
Like, it could, though. You know what I'm saying? Could. Like, It could. It could be a knockdown, like, drag out fight. It's weird. Anyway.
Yeah. So we shall see how that one plays out. Someone who is a contender in the UFC, talking about how Paige VanZant was, but we just saw Miesha Tate come back and win by stoppage in her return fight. Man, 5 years away?
Yeah.
To come back and win stops it in, what, third round?
Yep.
She looked good. She looked like Miesha Tate used to look. I was scared that the game might have passed her by, but the game, after the initial influx of people who are actually mixed martial artists, right? Like, it went from Ronda Rousey and everyone being specialists in the women's divisions to everyone's a mixed martial artist. You see, like, everyone has multiple tools. It's crazy. Joanna's here. You had the Lioness come in. You, even though Nunez wasn't who she was now back then, but you saw the transformation. Everyone can do everything. And I was like, damn, I don't know. You know, Miesha Tate is in that Ronda Rousey category. Like, did the game pass her up? But no, she looked very comfortable in all phases of the game. And it looks like, I don't know any inside information, I ain't talked to Big Mac about it or nothing, but it looks like she's kept active over these 5 years. I wouldn't be surprised if she trained throughout and learned some new stuff. I think she looks good and refreshed. And I like that there's another name in that division to come through. Because, God, do we need more contenders.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Miesha Tate has always been, you know, one of the better fighters. And it felt like her heart wasn't necessarily in it. Yes, she got doused in flames by Amanda Nunez. But she lost to Raquel Pennington. It just felt like, it doesn't feel like she wants to be here anymore. But now she's back. And will she contend for a title? Maybe. The women's bantamweight division is not exceptionally deep, right? And Amanda Nunez is always looking for opponents. Look, she's fighting Juliana Pena. She's going to beat the shit out of her. So it's like, hey, Miesha Tate could come around. Obviously, a fight that didn't happen or that should happen is Miesha Tate and Holly Holm. That probably should happen next. Makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, what? I thought Holly Holm was dominating that fight till Miesha jumped on her like a spider monkey in the last round and choked her ass out.
Yep.
To become champion. So, yeah, run it back. But with that, then I get scared that Holly Holm wins again. And then now Miesha can't get a title. Like, I kind of want the redemption story. I'd give Miesha Tate a better chance of beating Juliana Pena than Holly Holm.
True, but here's where we're at.
Styles make fights. I would give her a softer touch than Holly Holm.
It's like Valentina Shevchenko, right? It doesn't matter who the number one contender is. They're going to get killed. It doesn't matter who the number one contender is in the women's bantamweight division because Amanda Nunez is going to eat them alive. So...
For quite some time. She ain't getting challenged for a second. Other than that, in the car, Islam Makhachev headlining this card. I just call him Lil Beeb. That's it. He's Lil Beeb to me. Lil Habib in the octagon. He does a lot of the same things. I like his stand-up. I think it's more fluid at this stage of his career than Habib's was. And then when it's time to get busy. He knows he can take the guys to the ground. He knows he can dominate there. I love that he was very open and honest. Like, yeah, my corner was telling me to wrestle him and take him down, but I want to stand and trade. I want to get better at this. This is a different level of a game for him. This, I don't think he was ever in danger. He never felt in danger. This was like, yo, I just need to get more rounds in. This was sparring for him.
Yeah. Makhachev, I mean, he's, you know, trained by Khabib, obviously. Khabib could be coach of the year at the end of the year if he has all these guys undefeated. But Makhachev looks very dangerous. He looks like he's a problem for everybody in the lightweight division. A lot of people are calling for a fight with Tony Ferguson. Like, y'all just saw what Charles Oliveira did to Tony Ferguson. Makhachev is going to do the same fucking thing.
I didn't want to do this to Tony.
The fight that I do, that I am interested in, though, is Makhachev and Bilal Muhammad. I think that's a good fight for the division. And, you know, lightweight is crowded up top. You know, you got a lot of guys that, like I said, Justin Gaethje still doesn't have a fight. So if you do Bilal Muhammad and Makhachev, yeah, just fucking do it. Like, I don't know.
I like DC's idea of Dariush.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what I meant. Not Bilal.
Oh, Muhammad. Yeah.
That's welterweight.
Bilal is up. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a welterweight. That's what I meant. Beneil Dariush. That's the fight to make. Makhachev and Dariush.
So Makhachev, Dariush, Khabib. I think that's a good fight for him. I think that's a guy who will push his striking a little more. And Dariush knows what the hell to do on the ground. You know, so it's, you got to be a little bit more concise. It's not just going to be light work, easy work when you're on the ground. Are you just going to pummel someone for five rounds? Like, Khabib, can you get a submission against a guy like Dariush? There's a lot of puzzles to be solved there. I like that. I like that matchup a lot. So I think he showed a lot, though. That was a good win from him. We keep moving on. Coach Khabib is undefeated in the UFC, by the way.
Yes, sir.
Much like his fighting career. The guy can't take a loss to save his life. So that's really cool to see. Now we have another card going down to the UFC Apex this weekend. And we see the return of Macy Barber. Is this Aaron Pico status where she just working out the kinks to explode and be who we thought she was? Or is this a sign of greater trouble?
Well, I mean, Macy Barber Torres, Macy Barber is, I mean, Aaron Pico, is just, he was strangely enough too gifted in too many different areas that he didn't know what to focus on. So he just tried to do them all and that got him fucked up. Macy Barber, I think she's still very young. So I think she'll be okay. I don't know how good, I don't know where her ceiling is. And I don't think any of us know. She has a lot of potential. We don't know what her ceiling is. And we may start learning, you know, this week, as long as she stays healthy and she fights regularly, then we can kind of see her. Cause Macy's what? How old is she?
23.
Yeah. There's time with her.
It's another, like Miranda Maverick is just as young, 24. Really good fights lately. She's on a winning streak. So it's interesting. They didn't give her a soft toss.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So she has to go in there and earn that one. Darren Elkins is still fighting.
Yeah, the damage. Hey, man, he's fun to watch.
It's the worst tattoo in UFC history.
It is terrible.
The damage is on this card. So, yeah, I predict blood in that fight. Aspen Ladd versus Macy Chase on. That's one hell of a fight. Aspen Ladd's another one who's super young. 26 years old, bantamweight division. You know, got beat by Durandamé, but outside of that, she's looked great in every other fight. Beat Kuniskaya at the time. That looked like a good win. Shadara Eubanks. She's two or three fights away. But again, talking about people, we need fresh blood in the bantamweight division. Aspen Ladd is one of those people who can deliver that.
Yeah, and it's a tough fight. Macy Chiasson's a really good fighter. She's, you know, she only has one loss in her career. Both very young in their respective careers. It's a good fight. Kyler Phillips is also on this card. And Kyler's another guy who's kind of climbing up the ranks. So, you know, he's fighting Paiva in, I think, not the co-main event. It's the fight before that.
Yeah, it's the third fight. Third fight at night.
Yeah, and I'm very interested because Kyler Phillips is pretty damn good. And a lot of people don't necessarily know about him.
Yeah, so 26 years old. I mean, Kyler's young. Paiva's young. There's some good matchmaking going on right now. In the UFC, I was really impressed by Phillips against Song Yadong, who's my boy. Yeah, he beat Song Yadong last time out. So I am definitely interested to see his growth. It's cool. These are the fights he needs to really build that up. Bantamweight, on the men's side too, is a place that's wide open.
Yeah, definitely.
Division that is wide open. So Kyler can really grow into that role. Talk about bantamweight. We have the return of TJ Dillashaw versus Corey Sandhagen in the main event. I don't know how much of Dillashaw was PEDs. Because to me, he wasn't a world beater before and then switched his footwork up a little bit, went in there against Henry Burrell, and I was like, who the hell is this guy? And he was a completely different guy after that. And I don't know. I can't pinpoint when he started cheating. Like, where was the switch?
Well, you know, no.
Garbrandt rocked him a couple times, but...
That's not it. He was cheating to make flyweight to fight Cejudo. He needed help. He couldn't cut the weight. That's what it was. Like, they would have popped him way earlier.
I've heard differently.
There were suggestions, but all we can go off of is that he was using basically a diuretic to shed the weight. Now, sure. If you want to suggest that he was doing it for Cody Garbrandt, okay, whatever. But until he got caught, can't prove it.
I've seen interviews 2.5 years before where Cody Garbrandt names the exact substance that TJ Dillashaw then pops for 2.5 years later.
He popped 2.5 years later.
That's one hell of a coincidence when you name the exact, very specific cheating substance that he has in his system, which, yes, could be used as a diuretic, but also can be used when you are cycling down.
Whatever it is, I don't know when it was. All I know is when he got caught. My bigger issue with all of this is they've been treating this like this is TJ Dillashaw's redemption story. And it's so weird to me. I'm like, yo, he got popped, suspended. He's coming back against Corey Sandhagen, who's looked like a monster lately. Now, TJ Dillashaw, I know you said, you know, he didn't look like a world beater, but he kind of did, right? Like, he beat Cody Garbrandt. Right,
like, oh yeah, I was talking about the Henry Burrell, like before then, you know, when the switch flipped, and I was like, oh, this guy's an animal.
Well, because you know, Dillashaw, he lost to John Dodson in the Ultimate Fighter finale. I remember that.
Yep.
But Dillashaw always looked like a guy who was next. Uriah Faber couldn't stop talking about Dillashaw to me back in the day.
Yep.
So it was Dillashaw always had the tools, and his striking got together. He's a really good fighter. If you take out the element of that motherfucker's a cheater, this is a fucking great fight. Dillashaw saying, like, these two, they couldn't be necessarily more different in their styles, but I think it's going to mesh well. I think we're going to have a hell of a fight. That being said, I'm picking Sandhagen because Sandhagen, yes, he got wrapped up by Aljo. But since then,
that's his only loss in the UFC.
Yeah, since he's been mowing people down. I don't know if he stops TJ Dillashaw. I think this is going to be a hell of a fight. It could go either way, but I think Sandhagen's momentum versus Dillashaw's time away from the cage could be the perfect disaster for Dillashaw to lose this fight. And I think if he loses this fight, he'll win his next fight. He'll be fine. But this is a big order to come in and fight somebody like Sandhagen who's on the cusp of a title shot.
Yeah, if it's just a diuretic, maybe it doesn't mess with your mind. If it's not, if it's poor performance enhancing, I have to then wonder, can you do it mentally? Can you be the same? There's a question marks in your head when you come back. There's all these little things when you know, like, oh, I really can't cheat anymore. There's a microscope on me. Give me Sandhagen too, by stopping TJ Dillashaw. I don't know what Dillashaw is. He has to prove it. If he comes out and looks like $1 million, then, oh, well, great. He probably gets a title shot. But I don't know. I don't know what Dillashaw is. And Sandhagen's been in there recently, like you mentioned, against a really, really murderer's row type of guy. Like, just talent-wise, Frankie Edgar, Marlon Moraes, lost to Aljamain Sterling, but look, I mean, it was in the first round, but got wrapped up, the one thing you can't do against Sterling. Before then, beating Asensio, beating Lineker. Like, the guy's had good names in the UFC. He's up here for a reason. So I don't think he's ready to step off of that throne. I don't think TJ Dillashaw is going to come back in and just be, you know, TJ Dillashaw from 2018. Cody Garbrandt's not Cody Garbrandt from 2018. A lot of things change in 2.5 years.
Very true. Very true. That being said, everything you said, I'm with you. I'm picking Sanhagen. I don't know if he's going to stop him. I'm not going to make that pick unless you force me to. But yeah, but I would absolutely not be surprised if TJ Dillashaw won this fight, because he's still TJ Dillashaw, and who knows what he looks like if he's cycling off, or who cares?
He might come back and be a monster. So we'll see what happens on Saturday night. That is it for us today. We appreciate you guys. It was great to talk hip hop. First time in a long time where we got to dive into something that wasn't a versus in terms of music. So that was really cool. Boxing, a lot of moving pieces, man. It's exciting. This is like the last week I can take that deep breath and be like, I get to relax. Because once we hit August, it's on and popping all the way through like November. So we appreciate you guys. We appreciate you listening every week. Make sure you follow us on social media at Corner Podcast _ on Twitter, at Corner Club for Life on Instagram. You can follow me at Kel Dansby, him and Andreas Hell on all platforms. Shout out to Blue Wire, the network. Shout out to all of the sponsors. We'll be back this weekend talking pro wrestling, and there's tons to talk about in pro wrestling. Talk about boxing rumors and reports. They ain't got nothing on what happened to pro wrestling this week. So make sure you guys tune into that show on Sunday. But for now, we're out.
Peace.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.